This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi. We're going to be looking at the effects and importance of climate, particularly for WCT Level 3 students. WCT Level 4 students will also find this useful, but at Level 4, there's more complicated ways of looking at climate. So let's find out about climate. And one of the things you'll notice if you talk to most wine merchants is they'll talk to you about the importance of their soils. They have great soils for this and great soils for that, and that's why their wines are so unique. However, climate is much, much more important. In fact, the effect of soils is very much a second-order effect. Climate drives the grapes that can be grown and the styles of wine being produced, whereas soils are normally in response to some climatic effect. For example, if you're in a wet climate, things like gravel are very useful. If you're in a hot climate, limestone and clay is cooling, but if you're in a cool climate, you don't want to be on limestone and clay. So the importance of soils is really has to be taken into consideration when you're thinking about climate. And climate is by far the most important. As I said, climate tells you what grapes can grow where, the styles of wines produced, the disease pressure that those grapes may encounter, and therefore also the economic costs and cost of production can change varying depending on climate. And the most ultimate thing is yields. Yields are very much a function of climate, and the ability to produce high quality grapes at a high yield is really driven by the climate. If you understand climate, you can predict a lot about a wine region. So we're going to be talking about the different climates that are in the WCT Level 3 syllabus, how the climate influences the grape varieties that can be made there, and the flavors and styles of wine that can be produced. And we're going to be laying out the main three types of climates that you see at WCT Level 3, and therefore also what type of problems that need to be dealt with in association with those climates. Let's start off with different grape varieties. Different grape varieties like to grow in different regions. Some grape varieties like a warm region, such as Grenache or Monastrell. Some grape varieties prefer cooler regions, such as Pinot Grigio, Rieslings, even Pinot Noir. Why different grape varieties like different climates? We'll get into it another date. However, suffice us to say that the climate decide what grape varieties are grown and where they're grown, and also the styles of wine. Pinot Noir is a grape variety, likes to grow in cool to moderate climates. If you compare that to Grenache or Zinfandel, you'll see these climates prefer warm to hot climates predominantly. What that means is that they won't ripen very well in a cool climate. Similarly, Pinot Noir won't ripen very well in a warm climate. Normally, Pinot Noir loses its varietal characteristics if the climate gets too warm. Other thing that's quite important is the flavors that can be produced from that grape variety. If we look at Chardonnay, you'll see that Chardonnay can be grown in a cool, moderate, and warm climate. However, the flavors that you get vary depending on the climate. So if we look at Chardonnay and the flavors of Chardonnay, what you'll see is these are flavors that you typically expect to see in a cool climate. For example, Chablis or Champagne are both well-known cool climates. And green apples, lemon, pear, these are all very, very common flavors that you'd expect from a cool climate Chardonnay. As the climate gets warmer, you get more into a moderate climate, such as Côte de Beaune or Mâcon, then you're going to see the flavors get riper. So you're going to see things like peach, nectarine, even melon. And these warmer, stone fruit-like flavors come through at these more moderate climates. As the climate gets even warmer, you'll start to see things like tropical fruits coming in. Pineapple, banana, mango. These are all very, very popular flavors that you're going to get from Chardonnay in these warmer climates. Now, it's not just the flavors that are different in the climate. For example, in a cooler climate, you tend to find there's less heat. Less heat means less photosynthesis. So you find wines with lower alcohols and also higher acidities. So your classic Chablis grown in a cool climate, which is a Chardonnay, is going to be typically low end of moderate alcohols and green fruits, such as green apples, pear. As you move further down into Côte d'Or in the main part, which has got a more moderate climate, the temperature's warmer. So you'll see alcohol levels creep up. You'll see the acidity levels go down a little bit, and you'll see these riper stone fruit flavors coming in. And finally, in warm climates, you'll see that the acidity level drops again and the alcohol level gets even higher, and then we get into these tropical fruit flavors. So the style of wine that Chardonnay can produce is very, very dependent on the climate that it's being grown at. Not only do the grapes' flavors and structure influenced by climate, other things that are unique to each grape variety also matter. For example, some grape varieties are early budding. Some grape varieties are late budding. Sometimes it doesn't matter if it's early budding or late budding, but if you're in a cool climate with noticeable frost risk, it might be important for a later budding variety so that it avoids the worst period of frost. Typically, once the buds have burst and the plant is starting to grow for the new season, what you'll find is you can sometimes in certain climates get cold frost, and that will effectively freeze and kill the buds, meaning you lose your crop. So getting the right grape variety matched the climate to manage some of the weather and climate risks are also really, really important, and that helps determine what grapes grow where. A classic example of this is in Champagne. Pinot Noir and Chardonnay are generally considered the two top grape varieties in Champagne. However, Val d'Marne, which is a sub-area of Champagne, is well known for being quite frost-prone. As a result, the later budding Meunier is often used in these more frost-prone regions simply because it's less likely to be hit by frost. So early budding varieties like Pinot Noir and Chardonnay are not so good in a high frost environment, whereas Meunier, which is a little bit late budding, is better. Another late budding grape variety is, for example, Riesling. And you see Riesling being grown in a lot of very cool climates where frost is a significant risk. Now, when it comes to climate, there's two things you need to remember about the ripening of grapes. There's two general processes that we consider for grape ripening. The first is what we call the acidity sugar balance. So as grapes ripen, the sugar levels go up, and in a dry wine, that sugar is converted to alcohol. The warmer the climate, the higher the sugar levels, because photosynthesis is proportional to temperature. The warmer it is, the more efficient photosynthesis occurs up to a particular point, and as a result, you'll find you get higher levels of sugar. Similarly, you also get lower levels of acidity as well. So we see this sugar-acidity balance. As sugars rise, acidity levels come down. In a cooler climate, this doesn't occur as fast, so you land up with higher acidity levels, lower sugar levels. The other type of ripeness that's very common is what we call physiological ripeness. This is known as flavor ripeness. And this is the thing that takes a particular period of time from fruit set, when the flowers have been fertilized, through to harvest time. And that generally is pretty set. It doesn't change too much with temperature. And physiological ripeness are things like flavors and tannins. These are the period of time it takes to build up flavors in the grapes, or for red wines in particular, for those astringent tannins to soften and ripen and become more pleasurable to enjoy. Now, some grape varieties are well known for being early or late ripening. This is because the sugar levels build up faster or slower than typically for this particular climate, but it's also to do with how fast the flavors develop, the physiological ripeness occurs. Early ripening of grape varieties include things like Pinot Noir and Sauvignon Blanc, which means that these grape varieties are suitable for cooler climates. Mid to late grapes include things like Rieslings. Another example might be, for example, Merlot ripens faster than Cabernet Sauvignon. As a result, in climates where Cabernet Sauvignon struggles to ripen, such as parts of Bordeaux, Merlot, which ripens faster, is more likely to be able to produce good quality grapes than Cabernet Sauvignon in a dodgy vintage. As I said earlier, flavors often change as we go through climate. And the classic way to experience this is you'd normally expect, as the grapes ripen, the flavors change. Initially, they might be herbaceous, then they might go into more green fruits, then into more stone fruits, and then finally into more tropical fruits. And that's very common. Most white grape varieties will follow that sort of pattern. If you pick the grapes earlier, you'll get more herbaceous or green or citrus fruits. If you pick it later, you might get more tropical fruits, assuming that you can do that. Red wines follow a similar experience. So they go from herbaceous to red fruits to black fruits. As you go from cooler to warmer climates, you're going to see the grape varieties change from herbaceous, such as green pepper, tomato leaf, even minty flavors, through to red fruits, red plum, strawberries, raspberries, and then finally into black fruits like black currants, black cherries. Now that we've got an understanding of how important climate is to grapes, let's have a look at some of the different climate levels. And the key definition I want to give about climate is, weather is what's happening now. Climate is what happens in a typical year. With climate change, we can see it slowly change. But over the period of years and even decades, climate should be reasonably stable, whereas weather changes, well, almost every day, effectively. And climate is a function of three things. It's a function of temperature, the amount of water received, and also the sunlight. That's how we define climate. At level two, we used a very, very simple definition of climate. We divided the world up into three climate bands: cool, moderate, and warm. And the key definition of these different climates was the temperature. And the temperature for a cool climate is less than 16.5 degrees during the growing season. So that's spring, summer, and autumn. The average temperature during spring, summer, and autumn is less than 16.5 degrees. We would class that as a cool climate. A moderate climate is between 16.5 and 18.5 degrees, and a warm climate is above 18.5 to 21 degrees. At level three, we've introduced another climate band, which we've called hot. And hot is when the climate range exceeds 21 degrees during the average of spring, summer, and autumn. And that's how we define things mainly at level two, was just by temperature ranges. However, there's a number of different types of climates out there. You might have heard of things like tropical climates or Mediterranean climates. These tell you more about what's going on in the climate than just the temperature range. The three that are super important to us at level three is maritime climate, continental climate, and Mediterranean climate. Now, a maritime climate is usually associated with being right beside the sea, or being normally within about 50 kilometers of the sea. You'll get an ocean or sea influence into your wine region. So a maritime climate is typically cool maritime. You'll see moderate maritime, and occasionally you might see a warm maritime as well. The thing about a maritime climate is, because it's next to the water, the temperature of the water or the temperature of the sea or the ocean has a big influence on the climate itself. So, for example, if it's the middle of winter and it's really cold on the land, then the sea will be warmer. What happens is the sea tends to hold its temperature quite well. It doesn't change too much, whereas the temperature in the land will heat up and cool down relatively quickly. So as we go into winter, what we find is that the temperature of the sea is staying reasonably steady, but the temperature of the land is dropping quite significantly. What that means is, if you're by a relatively large, warm water supply, you're going to get that extra warmth coming in. So in winter, it doesn't get as cold as if you're further inland. And in summer, similar thing happens. The land heats up, but the water stays relatively moderate. You've got a cooling influence from the sea, and the land means it's relatively cooler because of that close proximity to that large body of water. We call that continentality, how much the temperature changes from summer to winter. Maritime climates have very low continentality, whereas surprisingly, our continental climates have a high continentality. We'll talk about that later on. The other thing that's quite important is what we call diurnals. Diurnals are your day-night temperature difference. On the land, at nighttime, when the sun's not shining on it, the temperature drops overnight and gets cooler and cooler and cooler. And then in the daytime, the sun's beating down on the land, the temperature warms the land up. Now, if you're by a large body of water, as the land temperature drops at night, you've effectively got a warm body of water supplying warmth to that particular region. So at nighttime, you get your temperatures moderated by the large amount of water nearby. And in daytime, the relatively cool water compared to the warm land means that it's cooling during the daytime. In other words, the temperature doesn't go particularly high, nor does it go particularly low on your day-night time. As a result, we would say that a maritime climate, or a climate near a very large body of water, you would expect to have low diurnals. The other thing you see a lot of by maritime climates is rain. You may not have noticed this, but you often get lots of cloud cover and rain by the coast. And that's because the wind blows along, it picks up evaporating water from the sea or the ocean that it's traveling over, and the clouds form. As they hit land, they often fall as rain. That means two things. First of all, you get cloud cover, which lowers your photosynthesis, which is a moderating influence on photosynthesis. In places like Coonawarra in Australia, where cloud cover is very common, this type of moderating influence can mean you get quite almost herbaceous wines coming out of Coonawarra, even though you'd think it would be quite warm, but the cloud cover moderates it. The other thing you get with a lot of cloud cover is rain. And a maritime climate, it does rain. In fact, it rains almost any time during the year. So there's very significant rain, and it tends to be at all times of the year. In fact, the worst times it can occur are things like fruit set. So when the flowers are being fertilized, if it rains during that period, that can be a real problem. The other time that it can be quite a problem is during harvesting. You can't spray to protect against molds and mildews just before harvest, which means that the grapes are unprotected just before harvest. And if it rains heavily just before harvest, not only will there be a risk of molds and mildews, there's also a significant risk that the grapes will absorb excess of water, diluting the concentration of the flavors and increasing the yield. Great if you want to produce a lot of wine, but not so good if you want to produce quality wines. The other thing that you get with all that rain is disease pressure. We said it's a problem just before harvest. Well, you can spray. There's lots of really good quality sprays that can help manage molds and mildews. However, all these sprays cost money. The more wet the climate, the more disease pressure and the more spraying. So your cost of production goes up if you're in a maritime climate. So maritime climate, you often see maritime climates for cool climates because that warming influence from the sea that can help aid ripening. Moderate maritime is also very common as well. The one that you don't see a lot of, but a little bit, is warm maritime. And the one you never see almost is hot maritime. You just don't see hot maritime climates. And that's your maritime climate. Just to recap maritimes, low day-night temperatures, diurnals, low continentality, that's your summer-winter temperature difference. Lots of rainfall, particularly during fruit set and harvesting, meaning you've got increased disease pressure, which means you've got increased cost of production associated with spraying to manage it. And the other thing that I haven't mentioned is light. If you're by a large amount of water, sometimes you'll get light reflecting off the water into the vineyard. So it can, in some places, cloud cover reduce light, but also if you're in the right aspect in the right place, you might get increased sunlight from reflected water. For example, Bandol in Provence in France is well known for having light reflecting off the Mediterranean Sea into the vineyards, improving the amount of light that the region gets. The next type of climate that's very common is what we call continental climates. Now, continental climates are the sort of climate you get when you're not near a large body of water. For example, if you drew a 50-kilometer line from the coast all around Europe, within that area you've just drawn would be classed as continental. And the further away you get from the coast, the more continental it gets. Continental climates are well known for high diurnals, so day-night temperatures. It gets very cold at night, very warm during the day. There's no moderating influence from the water. You also get high continentality, so that's your summer-winter temperature difference. Again, there's nothing moderating the temperature. Then the further you are away from the sea, the more continental temperatures you're going to get. One thing you see a lot of with continental climates is dry summers. The rain tends to drop by the coast in that maritime climate zone. And by the time the clouds move inland, they've lost a lot of their rain-making ability. So you might still get a little bit of high cloud cover, but you don't necessarily expect to see a lot of rain. That said, there are significant risks associated with a continental climate. For example, a cool to moderate continental climate, you would expect significant frost risk. What tends to happen is, in winter, it's very cold. In summer, it's very hot, but there's a period where the temperature's changing quite rapidly from being very cold to very hot. And it can be that you get 3, 4, 5 a week of quite warm temperature, and all of a sudden the vine thinks, oh, this is great, and they bud burst and they start to grow. But then you get a really cold snap that is bitterly cold, and you get a very hard frost, burning off your buds and losing significant crop that year. So increased frost risk is very common with continental climates, particularly in cool climates and moderate climates. As it gets warmer, such as a warm or a hot continental climate, you don't really see frost risk. However, the lack of rainfall means that you see a lot of drought. So drought becomes a problem in the warm and hot continental climates. The way to deal with drought is through irrigation, and that can be through things like sprinklers, drip irrigation, flood irrigation, etc. And that's your continental climate. Generally, a continental climate, because it's drier, has less disease pressure, and your cost of production, therefore, is a little bit lower. Also, you do get significant amounts of warm continental climate. There's a lot of regions with warm continental climate. For example, a lot of inland Australia is classed as a warm or hot continental climate. The final type of climate you might come across is Mediterranean climate. Now, the Mediterranean climate doesn't just apply to regions in the Mediterranean in Europe. Mediterranean climate was defined by that region, but you'll find a lot of Australia, big parts of Chile and America, particularly California, have a Mediterranean climate. Mediterranean climates are by the coast, typically. So the Mediterranean climate is being defined as being close to a very warm body of water. They tend to have low diurnals because of that warm body of water. They have low continentality as well because of that warm body of water. The other thing that's very important, unlike maritime climates, Mediterranean climates tend to have dry summers, and if they do get rain, it tends to be more in winter. What that means is you're getting dry, quite warm summers, and you're getting significantly less disease pressure. You don't typically see cool or moderate Mediterranean climates. It's usually warm or hot Mediterranean climates. And here, just like continental, the big risk, because it doesn't rain in summer, is the big risk is drought. The nice thing is, though, because there's less disease pressure, your cost of production is significantly lower. So once you've got your climate, once you know your climate, it tells you a lot about what type of risks and diseases you're going to get. The temperature tells you about what grapes are going to grow, and the climate tells you about what sort of issues you're going to have in terms of growing your grapes. There are things that you can use to mitigate climate. For example, if it's a little bit cold or you're too hot, you can use things like latitudes. The higher you are in latitude, the cooler the climate. The equator is 0 degrees latitude, and either side of the equator it gets significantly cooler as you move away from it. Grapes grow between latitudes 30 and 50 degrees latitude, 30 being a warm limit, 50 being a cool limit. And by knowing where the latitude is, you've got a rough idea of what sort of temperature range you can expect, particularly if it's a maritime or a continental type of climate and latitude. As the altitude climbs, for every 100 meters, the temperature drops on average about 0.6 degrees Celsius. Which means if you're a kilometer up, then you're going to be looking at about 6 degrees cooler than if you were at sea level. For example, some regions are incredibly high altitude. Cafayate in Argentina's Salta region is 3 kilometers up. That means that it's going to be 18 degrees cooler than if it was at sea level. But because of the vineyard is well out of that 30, 50 degrees, it's quite close, it's moving close to the equator, that extra altitude means that the wines are much cooler than you'd expect, and they can create very crisp, very fresh white wines in what would generally be considered too hot to grow because of this really high altitude that it provides a cooling influence. Other things that affect the climate include things like ocean currents. For example, up the side of Chile is a cooling current known as the Humboldt Current. The South Africans have the Benguela Current. The Australians have the Western Australian Current. There's also a cooling California Current running down the side of California. And then there's a warming current that brings warm water to England, but also running down the side into Bordeaux, etc., bringing warm water and raising the temperature a little bit than what you'd expect from its latitude. Other things that can influence or are influenced by climate are soils. Some soils are warming. Some soils are cooling. For example, clay and chalk are generally considered quite cooling soils, while gravel or stones or granite or slate or schist, all these stone-like soils are generally considered warming. Aspect is the other big thing. When you're in a extreme end of the climatic range, being able to get a little bit of extra ripeness can be quite important. So for example, in Germany, in the Mosel, the vines are quite often on steep slopes. And this is because the climate is cool, continental, very cold in winter, warming up quite a bit in summer, but still not particularly warm. By having vineyards facing towards the sun on a slope, the vineyards receive more energy and are warmer, which means you get more ripeness from them. So aspect can make a big difference. In Portugal, in the Douro Valley, where it can be quite warm, some vineyards are planted so they face away from the sun so they don't get too much sun and they can grow grape varieties that wouldn't normally grow very well in full blaze of the sun. So aspect, either to improve temperature or to reduce temperature, can be quite important. The final thing you'll see sometimes is some climates naturally have fog. Now, this is often associated with things like botrytis, but being near a river is quite handy for having large amounts of fog. So fog is also an element of climate that you might want to consider as well. So places like Sauterne or Montbazillac, these places often have quite high levels of natural fog at particular times of the year that help the development of botrytis sweet wines. Now, I mentioned that both continental climates and Mediterranean climates can suffer from drought, particularly the warm to hot continental, warm to hot Mediterraneans. And if you do have drought, then you need some way of getting water, and irrigation is generally the best way of doing this. There's a number of ways of providing irrigation. One of them is through drip irrigation. And this is where you set up a large amount of pipe networks in your vineyard and you provide drip, drip, drip irrigation to particular vines at particular times of the growing season to promote growth. Now, drip irrigation is very expensive to install, but it uses very little water. So if water costs are high, then drip irrigation is an excellent way of doing it. Another way is just to set up a river so that you divert a river and it just floods your vineyard. This is known as flood irrigation. Flood irrigation is actually quite cheap to set up. It just needs to create almost like a little pond, and you let the water in, you stop it when you've got enough water, the water sinks into the ground, and that gives you your supply of water for the vineyard. Now, flood irrigation is cheap to install and set up. However, it uses a lot of water and it's very wasteful. So the cost of water becomes really important. If the water's dead cheap, then flood irrigation might be a suitable solution. The final type of irrigation you can use is sprinklers, and that's just where a sprinkler sprays water all around the vineyard. The problem with sprinklers is that they can increase the humidity, they can keep your vineyard wet, which will increase your risk of disease, mold, mildews. Although that said, one good thing about sprinklers is that they do allow you during frosts. If you get a frost, then one thing that you can do is turn your sprinkler on, and as the water freezes on the grapes or on the buds, then the freezing water releases a small amount of warmth into the grapes. And as long as the water keeps freezing onto the grapes, you'll get continuously extra warmth coming through onto the grapes. So that helps them in terms of frost risk. Other types of frost risks include things like heaters. Some people will burn things. Now, the heaters themselves don't warm the vineyard up that much, but what they do is they create moving air. So the warm air rises, and as it rises, it draws in cooler air from above. Now, that cooler air will definitely be warmer than the air at ground zero, which is frozen. We call it an inversion layer, where maybe for the first meter or two above ground, it's quite cold. And then above that, it's actually noticeably warmer. And by creating circulating air currents, it's possible to create warmer air in that inversion layer and bring it down and stop the frost. So that's what heaters do. Sometimes people use fans, and they motor the fan so that it blows the warmer air from the inversion layer into the vineyard, again, protecting it from frost risk. And the other thing you can do for frost risk is what they call thoughtful vineyard design. Frost flows like water. And if you create opportunities for the frost to flow through and away from your vineyard, you're significantly less likely to be hit by frost than if you created, say, a hedgerow and the frost built up on that hedge, getting higher and higher and higher, almost like a dam. The frost levels build up and you start freezing your entire vineyard. So when you're designing a vineyard, you want to make sure that the frost can flow just like water can flow, and you manage it that way. Okay, that ends our look at climate. As I said at the beginning, climate is super duper important in terms of understanding what grapes can grow where and how they influence the grape varieties. They also set the risks and the costs associated with different climates. And they also have a really big influence on cost of production as well, and the types of wine being produced.